Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Mr. Grant.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, this week looking at the enemies of estate planning, enemies as in worst case enemies. There's several. You talked about time being a major enemy last week.
Probably our biggest enemy.
Probably the biggest enemy, because we need to get on this. And review a little bit more about what we talked about last week before we launch into this week.
Yeah, so first of all, you can head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com, and you can get the entire discussion about why is time your worst enemy in estate planning. But we really narrowed it down to three different categories that time erodes. And number one is that we constantly change as individuals. We have a different viewpoint in our life. We watch our families grow or decrease. We see praises or things that don't happen quite as we want them to happen in our family. We watch finances change. Maybe we've built more financial wherewithal. Maybe we've lost finances over the past 10 years. That would change things. So family issues are constantly moving, and a stagnant document cannot keep up with those changes. And then the second category is law and taxes. The law and taxes are constantly a moving target, and they always move. There's always influx. And again, a stagnant document cannot move without somebody going in and actually doing the work. And then the third category is professional and or attorney changes. So in other words, I am expected by my clients and by the public at large to know more next year than I do right now. As a matter of fact, people want me to get better. They want me to keep updated with what's going on in estate planning so I can be the best attorney that I am able to be. And so therefore, I learn new things, new techniques of being able to assist families and do better tax work. So therefore, that needs to be implemented into a plan. But the problem is that these three categories are highly neglected, and the document just sits on the shelf or in a drawer or in a safety deposit box, or half the time we don't even know where in the heck it is. Mm. So when somebody dies, we don't even know if one exists. So the whole issue is that the only thing that corrects these adjustments is by having a relationship with an estate planner that you implicitly trust. And that is my biggest encouragement. Number one, do estate planning. And then number two, make sure that that estate planner has a program that will keep your plan up to date at all times.
What happens when someone comes to you, they've already had an estate planner and they're changing estate planners and you're the new guy?
Yeah.
Do you start from scratch again, or do you try and update whatever they have, or how does that work?
So that is one of the biggest kept secrets in estate planning, which is if you come to me, and of course, it depends on how much time has passed. I've had some clients who have come to me from another attorney. I look it over and it's done reasonably well that we can make a fine-tuned adjustment. And then I have most clients, and I would say 95%+, even some of them who've just recently done it in the past couple of years. And from my perspective, there are gaps of information or tax issues or other things in the plan that are not going to really meet their objective or are not going to be as flexible in the planning. And so the dirty secret of estate planning is that we throw the baby out with the bathwater and start all over. Yeah. And most people, because they don't come to an estate planner usually around 10 years, up to 20 years, then so much has changed. Yeah. It's impossible just to make an amendment to that thing. And it is in the client's best interest and in the family's best interest to, again, just put it all aside and restart the whole process again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. That's the unfortunate news.
Okay. Well, you wanted to move into another enemy of estate planning, and it has to do with the whole area of the template version of estate planning.
Yeah.
And, getyourwillhere.com and things like
that.
Yeah.
This. Does that actually exist?
well, probably.
Okay. Yeah. And so, yes, there's a lot of on-site online sites that do estate planning. There's attorneys that use templates, unfortunately. And so we need to be aware of the template. And so here's really the biggest danger of templates, in my opinion, is that templates, they serve a function, which is, I always get the question, is something better than nothing? Mm. Well, of course, something is always better than nothing, okay? Mm. But it depends on what the something is. So as a very quick review, wills do two and sometimes three things very well. Number one, they tell us who gets the money, okay? So a will should at least have beneficiaries in it. Now, the negative of that is that it's just given to everybody. I don't like that, but that's a different storyline. We've talked about it on many previous shows. That's why I use trust as the primary planning tool. But so a will does a good thing in getting or naming who is supposed to have the property. Number two, it names, so this is a positive of a will, it names who is supposed to be in charge. So if we were to go to court and present a will, the judge would be able to say, oh, Paul, you're named in this document. You're supposed to now be what we call a personal representative or an executor. And so it did a good job in that it clearly gave intent of the person creating it of those two things, who's supposed to get the money and who is supposed to manage the estate on behalf of the decedent. So those are the two positives. Most wills then, the rest of the instructions are for the court so that the court can give you a specific authority, letters testamentary or coming out of a will. So a will then is mostly court instruction. It is not instruction to beneficiaries. And then the third thing that it can do, which we want, is that it names guardianships. Mm. So if you were to die and you have a minor child, then it names who do you want to now be the next parent? In other words, the guardian of the child. So it does those three things pretty well. And but beyond that, it's difficult to get a will to do much more. So in a template scenario, that is better than nothing because we've given information to the court. We've given some information. It hasn't been very expressive. It was typically very cheap. And whether you got it online or whether you got it from an attorney, it did not take much time.
What's the difference between those two, an online version versus one that came from an attorney?
Well,
I would think the online would be even more generic.
It tends to be more generic. Mm-hmm. And this is a really difficult topic for me because I don't want to put down my industry. Mm. But the truth is that a majority of attorneys still use a template. They may not be specifically aligned with estate planning. They kind of do it on the side, or they kind of do it as an ancillary, or they do it just because they have the template. That's the problem with a template, is that it's a pre-designed system where the law is already established and it goes through and it's simply putting in names in the appropriate places. And then occasionally, maybe there is a greater expression of a specific topic or a specific issue that you really want to give more words to. And so that could be a very good thing, which is that there's an opportunity to create those more expressive terms. I have permission to share this story, but, well, maybe I won't even say who it was, but I had a client, so there, now it's general and I don't even need to have permission, who came in, and the will that they had used said that I give everything to my wife, okay? And so that's what it was supposed to say. But really what it said is, I give everything to myself. Why? Because the attorney used a name and then they started changing the names and they forgot to change his name from, so in other words, the wife's template was done first. Mm. And it says, I leave everything to my husband. And then they must have done the husband second. So they changed the beginning names, but they forgot to change where everything goes. So they accidentally left the client's name in the same position. So see the problem? So the whole point was that there was a simple exchange of names in a template. So what we're doing in a template is we are pre-establishing what law you are going to use. And my proposition is that I am supposed to be an attorney that utilizes the law and taxes and leverages the law and taxes for your best interest. I am not supposed to just simply cram you into a pre-designed template where the law has already been established and I don't go back to it. So if someone doesn't have or has not been consistently getting updated information in estate planning, then maybe the templates have fallen wayside. Oftentimes because they're very inexpensive, staffing does the name changes instead of actually the attorney doing the work. So please don't misunderstand. I'm not putting down what an attorney does. I'm just simply stating a fact that most attorneys still use templates, and that should not be. Now, online, you said, are they more general? Yeah, they are more general. They're even more general than that. And not only that, but they're actually not created properly oftentimes because they don't give specific law on how to actually sign the document. So in a will, you don't need a notary. You need two witnesses in Washington. And so if a template that is not coming from a Washington place doesn't have that information, I've seen wills that are notarized. And so then the court would have to look at it and take a leap to say, we're going to accept it anyways, even if it was not properly signed or attested to. And so will an attorney ensure the validity of a will? Yes. But, and there is a possibility that on an online one, a do-it-yourself scheme, that there is a greater danger that we may not even get it signed properly. So templates then are creating law and they're placing you into it instead of taking the law and wrapping it around your specific family and your specific needs. So templates, in my opinion, are a danger. They will not accomplish a specific estate plan. And by the way, are you exactly the same as your neighbor? Nope. Do you have exactly the same values? Nope. Do you have exactly the same finances? Nope. Are your family dynamics exactly the same? Nope. Then how in the world can a template ever accomplish the same goals? And the answer is they can't.
One of an estate plan's worst enemies, the dreaded template. Better than nothing, but not a lot better than nothing. So if people are intrigued, they want a real estate plan, they want to work through some of these issues with you, Paul, how do they get in touch with you?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's upcoming educational sessions. There's ways to communicate with me. And there's past podcasts. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Legacyandfaith.com. Back with more of the show. We'll be looking at some of the other enemies of estate planning in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show. featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, a Legacy and Faith show this week looking at enemies of estate planning, the estate plan's worst enemy. And before we launch into how second marriages can be an enemy of an estate plan, you wanted to mention more about attorneys.
Yeah, look, there are some gaps that I believe are in the industry as a whole, and that's what I am trying to address. I am not pinpointing any specific attorney. There are extraordinary, competent, intelligent, compassionate, and caring attorneys in the marketplace. My proposition is you need to find somebody that does estate planning and is focused on that and is compassionate and wants to ensure that you, that your plan is carried out. There are many, many attorneys. So I just didn't want to leave a negative feeling in my discussion of templates and that many people still use them. Even attorneys use them. There's some gaps in estate planning as a whole, but the whole point is find the right attorney when you start doing estate planning. And so I am not down on my profession. I love my profession and I love my colleagues. There are many out there who want to do excellent, godly work. Find them. That's the whole point. Find them.
Okay. Well, another enemy of an estate plan is the remarriage. Now, remarriage could be fun and nice and a blessing in a person's life, but it does pose possible dangers for the estate plan.
It does. It poses great concerns with estate planning. I was looking up some facts about estate planning, and there was a survey done. I don't know how many people they surveyed, but this specific group tracks this type of data. And so in essence, what the data was referring to is how many people are now getting remarried compared to in 1960. Mm. So they did a 45-year study from 1960 into 2015. So it was done about 5 years ago. And what they have found, the trend is that older individuals, so I'm almost there, but it separated it from 55 to 65. And nowadays, the trend is that that age group gets remarried at a higher percentage than ever before in our history, and actually by a reasonable percentage point. And here's the other interesting thing. Women in that age group are getting remarried at a much higher rate. From 31 to 52% of women in that age group are now getting remarried compared to 1960.
Wow. Wow.
So in 1960, 31%. Now in 2015, women between the age of 55 and 65, 52% will get remarried.
Wow.
Now, let's just take that age group, okay? I'm almost there. I'm not quite there. So if something were to happen to my wife, all right, let's talk about some of the concerns that I might have. Number one, I have two daughters. So if something happened to my wife, where do you think my wife would want anything that I don't use in what we've built together to go? Would she want it to go to a spouse that I remarry, or would she want it to go to my kids? And the answer is pretty simple. It's every single time.
Of course.
And so, therefore, most estate plans don't have these type of safety nets built into them for remarriage issues or blended family issues. So I would have kids, and then if I married someone of similar age, what's the assumption there? That something happened to their marriage and they probably have kids. So now I've got his and her kids to deal with in an estate plan. All right. So this is one of the biggest dangers, and is that in this age group, it is a societal trend statistically shown that people are getting remarried within 55 and 65 at a higher rate than ever before. And that creates decisive estate planning dangers that are rarely talked about and rarely addressed, and primarily a his and her kids type of issue. Now, also, as an attorney, so I've been practicing now, I think, for 11 years. If you remember my story, I went to law school when I was 38 years old. And so so my story is very unique. I worked for UPS for 12 years. I owned several small businesses. One succeeded, one failed catastrophically. All of those were learning experiences and catapulted me into law school. So now I've been an attorney for a period of time. And as I have been blessed, then that may mean what does the financial picture look like if I were to walk into a different marriage? How about the new wife that is coming into the picture? Have they been a career person? Do they have assets? Have they inherited money? Or do they have they been a stay-at-home mom forever? What's the scenario? So there could be an unequaling of assets in second marriages. So is that a concern when we're talking about estate planning? And the answer is yes. So now I've got two major components of estate plan: family and money. And not only that, but would my perspective over the past 50 plus years of my life be different than the perspective of a different spouse? So now let me clarify, I am not getting remarried. My wife is healthy and it's all good. I'm using my life as an example, okay? So what are the estate planning challenges? Well, those are some fairly deep-seated challenges that we have to work out, which is, do you think that most second marriages have actually talked about these topics of, well, where does the money go? Do we split everything 50-50 to your kids and my kids? I brought more money in, or I have a business, so the business should be mine. These are tough conversations, and I've had them repetitively with blended families.
Well, I would think with the second marriage, particularly at that age, quite often what's used is a prenup. Does
yes.
that help? Does that help with this issue, estate plan issues?
Yeah. So a prenup, or many people say, well, we're just going to keep our assets separated. So whatever one person brought in versus the other person, then those are just going to remain in separate bank accounts. Or a prenuptial agreement is believed to be something that can work. Now, here's the thing about prenups. Now, this is what I've heard, because I am not a family attorney. I do estate planning and tax planning and business planning. I don't do family law. However, in talking to colleagues, in talking and looking at different cases and seeing what prenups do, prenups have a shelf life, because here's what happens. Someone gets remarried, and we're going to make a presumption that it is a good relationship. So over the course of years, what takes place? We begin to blend together, which is, if you have a good, strong relationship, would probably be our goal anyway, specifically as believers, right? The two have become one, the two have not become separate. And so therefore, it is a natural progression of relationship to begin to blend more and more. As that happens, prenuptial agreements, in my understanding, so again, I'm raising a big flag here, okay, which is I have not researched this as far as an attorney, as far as case law. I have never tried a case like this. So again, this is what I understand, is that a prenuptial agreement will begin to wear down its efficiency and effectiveness because the couple are becoming more and more blended, that it is difficult to maintain the separateness of what they are doing. And not only that, but I believe that the law favors that we begin to look at the couple as a unit instead of segregated at all times. And the prenup is trying to separate you consistently.
What about someone who just lives together? They don't get married.
Boy, that's another trend, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so instead of getting remarried, we're just going to live together. We're just going to cohabitate. And same thing, most people don't realize that community property attributes attach to your accounts. They attach to income. So even though you live together and never get the ring, if you are in a marriage-like relationship, which, by the way, if you're living together, that's pretty much marriage-like, then community property can attach to your assets and to the other partner's assets. Mm. And it really has not accomplished what most people think are going to be accomplished. Mm. And so it just sets up another big disparity in what happens if somebody dies and who can challenge it and where does the money go. And oh, by the way, we have all the same blended family, different kids, different money, and the list goes on. Mm. And so these are some really big dangers. We've got time. We've got templates. We've got relationship issues. We've got a gap in knowledge and an understanding. And we got to resolve these things in estate planning. So head over to my website. We've got good information there. We've got educational sessions coming up. We've got all of our past podcasts. Head over to legacyandfaith.com. And there's many things that you can click, get tools, and again, upcoming workshops. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Great show, Legacy and Faith, with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.